The latest statistics tell us that now the rich 1% of the world own 86% of the world's wealth. So 1% own 86% of the world's wealth. In the United States, top 20% of the richest own 88% of the country's wealth. They own 86% of the country's wealth, and the bottom 80% of the population owns 14% of this country's wealth. Now, I begin my homily with this statistic for a couple of reasons. One, just the staggering inequality. But I also think I'm beginning my homily with these statistics because in a capitalist economy such as ours, the parable of the talents might make us conclude that the top 1% are really the heroes of this parable. And the rest of us are either lazy or stupid or incapable. And I don't want us to reach that conclusion, because this parable talks about riches and the bank and all those fun things. Matthew's purpose of writing this parable is not economic. It's not even about the natural talents that we have. I'll talk about that in my third point. The danger that I'm trying to avoid is that if the master in the parable is like God and the servants are like us, then we have to be very careful in how we interpret this parable, because there's a possibility that we might get God all wrong, that we might get our role and our mission all wrong, and that we might think that the expectations that God has from us is very different than what it really is the case. So I want to begin with two peripheral points, and then I want to interpret this parable correctly in my third point. So what's the first point I want to make? Folks, in this parable, especially towards the end, there's a lot of negativity. In fact, this parable, when you read it, it leaves kind of a bad taste in your mouth. That last dialogue between the servant and the master is not very positive. The third servant, who did not use his gifts, says about the master that he's harsh and that he reaps where he has not sown. And then the master retorts by saying that this third servant is just wicked and lazy, and he's thrown out into the darkness. Well, rightly understood, correctly understood, this parable is not negative. In fact, it's a very positive parable, because it tells us some things about God's nature. And what are the things that we know about God from this parable? First, that God is generous. To each of the people to whom he owned nothing, the master generously gave his possessions. And he says, go, do something with it. Now, I don't know how many of you watch this television show called Shark Tank. How many of you watch Shark Tank? Do you know how hard it is for the entrepreneurs to get the sharks' investment in their company? In other words, stuff doesn't come easy. Or have you applied for a loan ever? You know what it takes to get the loan approved? On the other hand, here is this master who gives his possession. He's generous. God is a generous God. Secondly, the parable tells us that God trusts the people to whom gifts are given. And so when the master goes away for a long time, he does not impose his views on the people to say, okay, this is what you must do. He gives them the talents, and he trusts them with the talent. So God is very trusting. And thirdly, the parable tells us that God gives to each according to his or her ability. So there was one guy in the parable who got 5 talents, one got 2, the third one got 1, and scripture tells us it's because the master gave to each according to his ability. This means that God is not this hard taskmaster that the third one accuses him of. Actually, God is generous, God is trusting, and God does not expect more from us than our ability. Secondly, my second point, the 3 people to whom the talents were given tell us something about us. It tells us that we're all gifted according to our abilities. And the lesson of this parable is not merely that we must live meaningful lives and use our talents in a meaningful way. That's, in my opinion, self-evident. I'm not even concerned about the fact that some of us may not use the gifts that God gives us. There is something else I'm concerned about. How our God-given talents and abilities are used to bring destruction and pain. There are a lot of very talented, very able, very intelligent people in the world. How many mass shootings have we had in our country just in the last month? And all the sexual harassment cases that are coming up now against politicians, presidents, celebrities, public figures. I'm sure this happens in our homes and in our families. What is it that we don't know yet? How much pain is there in the world? And it's caused by very talented, intelligent, and gifted people. On the one hand, we have that, and on the other, there are millions and millions of people who bring much goodness to the world. You are here. People who are trying to worship God and trying to bring that to the world, trying to do good. As we look back at history, we can think of the people who were very gifted and they left death and destruction behind. Hitler, classic example, isn't it? Very gifted man. But look at the death and destruction that his talents brought to the world. And then you have the people who were not very gifted, yet brought so much good to the world. Think about Mother Teresa. She wasn't the most brilliant, wasn't the most intelligent. But boy, she brought so much goodness to the world. So here are the few questions that I think we should ask ourselves. How will history judge your life and mine? When we stand before God, what will the story of our life look like? How will our family tell our story to the future generations? As we reach the end of the liturgical year, the church is giving us these eschatological parables, and this is a big word, but basically means parables that talk about the end times. The church is giving us these parables so that we can look at the meaning of our lives and be prepared to stand face to face with God. Now to the real meaning of the parable. Why is this parable written? What is Matthew's intention? What's the meaning? Folks, this parable is not about money. This parable is not about physical management. This parable is not about increasing profits. This parable is not even about the natural talents that we have and how we are using them. Matthew was not writing this parable to us for that reason. Matthew was actually addressing the Jews of his time in his community who had given a very cold reception to Jesus Christ and the good news of the gospel. That is his intention. In his mind, those who did not accept Jesus Christ and the gospel were like that third servant who received the good news and then did nothing about it, nothing with it. On the other hand, there were Gentiles who had received the gospel, and boy, the Gentile community was growing. And so Matthew is really trying to ask the Jewish community, you received the faith first. You have your gifts and your talents. How come you are refusing the gospel? How come this great gift that God has given us, you're not doing anything with it? That's the main meaning behind this parable. So folks, what does this mean for us? The practical implication of this parable for us is simply this: that God has given us the gift of life and the gift of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are alive today. We are breathing. It's God's gift. And yes, we have family, we have our jobs, God has given us our talents, but one of the greatest gifts that God has given us is Jesus Christ and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And God has given this to us because God is generous. Secondly, that God trusts us with the gospel. Really, he has put the gospel in our hands. We are simple, weak human beings, and yet God trusts us with the gospel. So, God wishes, this is the third practical implication, God wishes that we might use our life to spread the gospel. That our life may be a shout out to the gospel. That our gospel is, the gospel of Jesus Christ is not just used for our own benefit, to bring glory to ourselves. Or all the gifts that we have, it's not for us to just propagate ourselves, but our life and everything that we have is geared up towards Jesus Christ and the gospel that Christ has entrusted into our hands. And each one of us is only expected to let the gospel grow, each according to his ability. God does not expect from us more than what we are capable of. You know, not a few years back, 17 years back, when I first came to the United States, for three months I lived in St. Louis in a parish called St. Monica. And in the parish, I met this very little fragile woman. Her body was completely crippled because of arthritis. She was bedridden. I went to see her one day, and she was really down and out. Could not understand why God was doing this to her. Why all this was happening to her, the meaning and purpose of our life. And then I asked her this one question. He said, will you do me a favor? She said, sure. I said, in your pain and in your suffering, will you become my intercessor? And suddenly, I saw a spark, a very small spark in her eye. I told her, every time I need prayers for somebody, when somebody asks me to pray for them, I'm going to ask you if you will pray for this person. And slowly this little ministry grew. She actually became one of the most powerful intercessors in that parish. This little woman whose fingers were so crippled that she could barely hold her cup. This woman who could not walk. From her bed, she spent her life at the service of the gospel, praying for the needs of the world. And I would call her 10 times a day. Please pray for this. Please pray for that. For 7 years, she did that. She died a few years back. And the opening song for her funeral was, "How Can I Keep From Singing?" God is not expecting much from us. But God has given us our life and the gospel. And to the best of our ability, our life must be at the service of the gospel. That's the message of this parable. When we stand face to face with God, may God say to us, "Welcome, good and faithful servant. come and share in the joy of the Master. This Eucharist is also a gift. Can you believe it that Jesus entrusts himself into our hands today? Look at that trust. Look at the generosity that God has. What are we going to do with Jesus this week? How is the gospel going to grow through my life this week? Think about these things, people of God said.